Welcome to The Watching Dead, the officially unofficial podcast for The Walking Dead on AMC. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And this is the last time I will ever have to say those words. Aaron, this is a series wrap-up. We've waited 12-plus years to do this episode. I said season 6, maybe we should do this, the series wrap-up right now. Maybe we should just get it out of the way, because this might be it for The Walking Dead. No, turns out another 6 seasons have transpired, and here we are, finally doing the episode. We got a lot of feedback from a lot of people. I know we're going to be covering that. Is there anything that we want to do before then? Do we want to relive the Fiesta days of Fiesta de Lori?
The thing is we've already done a definitive end of show podcast where we did all that stuff, and we did it at the end of season 8 when we rage quit the show. So if you want like the nostalgic look back out of all the little skits that we did and all the little voice stuff and all that, so yeah, check out the season 8 finale.
The only thing we've added to the repertoire since then is the Huacha. So if you want that, just go back to the end of the middle of season 10. I can't remember when that was.
I feel like the Feral Daryl stuff might have been, because like I was, Rick voice was always my go-to shtick, you know, when Rick went away, I had to find something else, and the Feral Daryl is what stepped forward. So like that's, I definitely update the thing for that. And we also had the we had one skit in this era of The Walking Dead, the King Ezekiel's Ren Faire.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good time.
It's good times. We've got we got a lot of stuff to talk about. We got a lot of feedback. A lot of people have been, you know, doing this with us for those 12 years, and they had a lot to say, and I want to honor that as much as possible. I do want to key on something. You said that this is the last time you're ever going to have to say these words about The Walking Dead, et cetera, et cetera. Are you making a solemn pledge to not cover any of these spinoffs or none of the, like, you're done. Done. There's nothing getting you back.
I mean, I was speaking specifically to the words the Walking Dead, because if we're going to talk about any of the other shows, it'll have to be, you know, Fear the Walking Dead or The World Beyond or one of the various. It'll have to be Maggie and Negan or Daryl Dixon or Rick and Michonne.
That's true. I thought it might be fun to get some of the OG podcasters like Jason Kabasi from the Deadcast, or maybe Jason and Chris from the Talking Dead or something. Like, it might be interesting to convene a council of podcasters and talk about experiences under this brand. But like, yeah, I'm kind of surprised in the last few weeks how I flip from like, fuck all this shit, I'm not gonna be, to like, I might check it out, like, you know, just for morbid curiosity.
I guess my curiosity comes in like, how far have we diverged from our other show host counterparts? Like, are we the lone voice out there saying this was kind of garbage for 90% of its run? Yeah. Or have other podcasters come around to our way of viewing this thing? And how did they react to the Angela King era? Because that's been hit and or miss from time to time. So it might be fun to do something like that.
Yeah, that might be interesting. If we do something like that, you know, you, I guess I stay subscribed to this feed. I will say that, like, just want to make sure everyone knows that there is another zombie show coming out that I have high hopes for. It's The Last of Us. It's going to star Pedro Pascal. It's got Craig Mazin, or is it Maislin?
Mazin.
Yep. I finally got it right. The director Chernobyl, such engaging, and had a lot of kind of like post-apocalyptic stuff on it already. I'm very excited about that. We're going to be covering that day one. It starts January 15th on HBO Max, and we'll have coverage. We'll probably have a kickoff, you know, the week before. And now, unfortunately, I don't have a feed that I can turn you towards that. We haven't actually got that established, but we are going to do it. If you want a feed that is going to 100% guaranteed be covering that podcast, check out Bald Move Pulp. That's where we put all of our spaceship, our dragon, our zombie type coverage in, and it's a pretty good follow. If you like Marvel stuff, you like Star Wars stuff, if you like, you know, like I said, zombie stuff, check that out. So if you want to get all of our fantasy slash pulp stuff, go to Bald Move Pulp. In any podcast player you got, you'll be able to find it, or on our website. Because I think, especially if you're a fan of the promise of the Darabont days, this is going to be a thinking person's zombie show that mm-hmm. deals realistically with loss and love and relationships and the threat of the Walking Dead. I think The Last of Us might scratch that itch a little bit better than anything that the Mazaras and Gimples and Kangs were able to deliver us. All right. I want to get started with Riley G. You talked about with the skepticism about the spinoffs. They're all about that. It says, I cry bullshit on The Walking Dead's expanded universe. Seriously, what's more plausible for their new series? The Daryl spinoff somehow makes it across the ocean to France. This backwards character has already been a fish out of water for 12 seasons. Are they really going to try to 10 times that after he learns how to operate a sextant? Aaron, you'll finally get your Master and Commander sequel. I think they're going to posit that there's an effective transatlantic trade, like these helicopter people are going to, they're going to meet up with the boat people, and they're going to have barges and shit. They're going to have mechanized travel across the Atlantic.
Daryl's just going to strap some paddles to his, back rotors, on his bike. He's just going to turn his bike into a paddle boat.
A pontoon boat with a paddle wheel in the back. Uh-huh. Yeah.
It just paddle its way across the Atlantic.
I kind of hope it is a big sailing boat, because I don't know that I buy. Do you know how much fuel it costs for a large ship to go across the Atlantic? I don't either, but it's a lot.
It's a lot.
And like, you know, they've kind of been hazy about like where they're getting the diesel for this, that, and the other, and helicopters and whatever. But like, if you're regularly sending big boats across the Atlantic or the Pacific, that's going to require like refineries and oil pump. And I don't know, maybe someone's rebooted the world that much, but like, boy, mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm kind of curious to see how he gets in Paris myself.
Yeah, there's the three ring binder people. I forget whatever those three circles are, whatever they stand for. The CRMs, I don't know.
The Civic Republic, Civil Republic Military, I think.
Customer relations managers.
Salesforce has gotten militant. They really put the force in Salesforce.
Yeah. So they can have refineries. I don't know. I haven't watched the shows that tell us what they're up to, but I plan to never watch those.
Riley continues to roast Maggie and Negan. What could really force them into a scenario so extraordinary that she can move past their soul-crushing first interaction? Get it? Crushing? Negan's past will be relitigated ad infinitum as long as JDM receives an AMC paycheck. What are the odds this is just a ruse to get to pack a surprise emotional punch? This was sent in a couple weeks ago before the finale. The idea that these shows are so ridiculous that they're cover for the fact that big deaths are going to happen, and they want us to be super duper surprised because they've told us that it's not going to happen and now it's going to. Of course, that didn't come to pass.
There's still a possibility, right? Episode one opens of Maggie and Negan, and Negan's just killed by Maggie. She's like, yeah, remember all that stuff I talked about, how I'm never going to forgive you? Well, this is it. And she kills him with a baseball bat. And then the show is still called Maggie and Negan for the next 12 seasons while they do that show. He's just dead in the first one.
I mean, seriously, I don't think they're going to do that, but it would be pretty funny. Or the world beyond of what I'm looking at audience numbers, because I think that they're going to struggle to pull a one share on this thing
for any of the spinoffs.
Yeah. Cause when I'm looking at the,
Daryl Dixon.
When I'm looking at the ratings for these shows, they're struggling to get to 2 million. And this back half season, they've been struggling to stay above the 1 million mark. Although the Rest in Peace did bring another million. They've been waffling around, you know, 1.3, 1.4, the Rest in Peace, the finale, got 2.27, so almost a million people came back just to check it out. So I don't know. All right. They might, with the Daryl spinoff, get to 2-3 million. I don't think they...
That's the thing. So there were 2.2 million people watching the first episode of season 11, and 2.27 watching the final, which means like 50,000 people or so hadn't seen anything of the season but came back for the finale.
Yeah.
And then, there's hundreds of thousands of people who watched the first and last episode of that season and nothing in between. What's even the point?
Apparently so.
Why even come back for the finale? You have no context.
Maybe those are the 500,000 or 500,000 a million people are watching on AMC Plus, and then they were like disgruntedly coming back because it wasn't on AMC Plus that last one.
Okay, yeah, maybe.
But yeah, I don't know. I don't expect long runs of any of this stuff. But who knows? Who knows? Maybe there'll be 2 years of cashing out, and AMC will come up with something else. Edward says, I've been a big fan of your Walking Dead podcast coverage for years. Well, thanks, Edward. Only reason I stuck with the show is in the end is that you decided to come back and finish the series. So thank you for that. Maybe there should be a question mark. There's a period, but maybe there's a question mark implied there. I'm also delighted to hear you'll be covering The Last of Us. I'll definitely be listening to your coverage on that. Again, check out Bald Move Pulp if you want to make sure you don't miss out a single episode. I'm from Ireland, relatively close to Paris in global terms. How would I cross the Irish Sea or the Celtic Sea to reach the continent in a zombie apocalypse?
Motorcycle with a paddle wheel.
How Daryl's going to achieve this and cross the Atlantic is baffling. Again, motorcycle pontoon with a paddle wheel.
Mm-hmm.
I might have to watch at least one episode to see how they manage this. Is this what they're counting on?
If he can hold a wheelie long enough, he doesn't even need the pontoons.
It's true. It's true. Yeah. Is this like a train wreck phenomenon where they're just counting on looky loos?
Checking
out for the carvage,
right? I mean, they're not going to pull enough. I'm looking at the Fear of the Walking Dead numbers, and they're on a similar trajectory as The Walking Dead, which shouldn't surprise you. Like 2 million in season 5, like struggling to pull one at the end of season 6. Barely pulling one at the beginning of season 7, and now it's down to like 500,000.
And you look at World Beyond, it's brutal. Like, they didn't get over 0.8 the entire second, and the final few episodes are 0.5, 0.4.
Are the Funko Pop sales really so strong that like you can support an entire TWCU on the backs of the sales of those?
I don't know. I'm trying to set my expectations, because it wouldn't surprise me if these things are just dead on arrival. Like, they're not even pulling a one. Like, people got to the end of The Walking Dead and are like, thank Christ, this is an off ramp.
Yeah.
So I'm really curious. But like, I also see, because you said that like the legions of Funko Pops, the video game people, the people that like have invested in this show, kind of like we have for 12 years. Like, it wouldn't surprise me for like 4 million. The Daryl Dixon spinoff, if they came back right away and they had the Rick and Michonne when ready to go, like I could see that getting pretty big numbers as a dedicated miniseries. I just don't know what Michelle and Negan are going to do. That's the one I really worry about, and it's the one that's leading off. If that thing struggles to get to 1 million people watching it, man, I just don't know.
Yeah, I don't know how you would get across the Irish Sea. Yeah. Sorry, I can't help you. A sailboat, a small sailboat, maybe.
I'm also kind of curious about the Maggie and Negan spinoff. They're probably two of the most interesting characters left on the show. Probably also watch the Rick and Michonne series. I feel like every time I get you feedback of this, I got to revise my estimate up
by one. Sure.
The two predictions. I predict Carol sacrificed herself to save everyone. Didn't happen. Maybe a train filled with explosives like the end of V for Vendetta to take out the higher ups of the Commonwealth. That sounds awesome. But alas, we just got the explodable subway tunnels.
Mm-hmm.
Double A Ron says, first time.
Let me ask you about the exploding subway tunnels. I assume.
Yeah.
Did they just blow up all of Pamela's friends and major donors?
Yeah, it looked like
the
estates.
Or did they evacuate all of them?
Oh, no, I think they got... I don't think they... I think they spared everyone.
Okay.
Hey, don't shamble off. We'll be right back after the break. You've been listening to quite a few Bald Move podcasts now, but you're not in the club? Whoo boy, you are missing out.
Not only are all of our premium club podcast feeds completely ad-free, but we have lots of other great content exclusively for people in the club.
There's a weekly lunch with Jim and Aaron where we chat with fans about anything and everything from TV and films, food, fun, life advice, and more.
But there's also Off the Clock, our premium podcast where we talk about all the shows we don't have time for on our public feeds.
Plus, you get access to our full spoiler-filled first-run movie reviews of our newly released films.
Don't forget Instant Take and Talk podcast, where we give our hot takes and discuss television shows with our fans live and immediately after the episode airs.
With mega shows like House of the Dragon coming this summer, we're going to have lots to talk about.
Not to mention access to our fun and friendly community of club members, with exclusive Discord channels and a dedicated forum. It's one of the best places on the internet to hang out and chat about pop culture.
Bottom line, you're helping two regular type guys in the Midwest make the content you like to listen to, which some would say is rewarding to itself.
Help keep the lights on and the bits flowing at Bald Move.
And get some awesome content for yourself. Head to support.baldmove.com to join the club today. Commission podcasts are an awesome feature here at Bald Move that allows you, the individual listener, to decide what we talk about for a single podcast.
The community loves it because it often leads to fun fan favorite films and TV shows that we've overlooked getting the coverage they deserve.
And we love it because we're constantly exposed to great stuff that's not even on our radar.
The way it works is simple. You go to support.baldmove.com and you click on commissions. Then you pay the flat rate for the commission and tell us what two-ish hours of content you'd like us to make podcasts on.
Then we'll contact you for details, advanced feedback, and any dedications you'd like to make.
Then we watch the thing, discuss the thing, turn it into a podcast, and pump it right into your ears.
We get consistently great feedback on how much our commissioners love their podcast, and they make great gifts for the dedicated Bald Move fan in your life.
And who knows, that dedicated fan could even be you. Treat yourself. Check out support.baldmove.com for more info.
Welcome back, survivors. Here's even more of The Walking Dead. Double Aaron says, long time, first time. I'll try not to ramble on too much, but I do have some thoughts as we wrap up this series I wanted to share. It's what we're here for. First, I feel like the series did itself a disservice when the walkers became something not to fear. In the early days, the show was legit edge-of-your-seat stuff. Think back to when Morgan's wife was turning on the doorknob. Yeah, creepy shit. Then it just went from one group of people to the other, highs and lows along the way, but I feel like they took the focus off much of the walkers and became an annoyance to be dispatched quickly. Okay. I don't know how you feel about this, because the comic, that's the bend of the comic too, that like the zombies are, of course, everywhere and they're an omnipresent threat. And you've just got housewives and biology teachers and retirees trying to, like, fight this. But eventually, the survivors are badasses to where the dead are no longer that much of a challenge anymore. Then the living become the real threat. I think that's really cool. The thing, the number one sin of The Walking Dead is that they didn't wrap this thing up in 7 or 8 seasons.
Yes. Oh, 7 and 8. It might be too many. I think 5 seasons. You could have done, you could have cut back on like the repetitiveness of some of the comic stuff too, because like going from community to community and finding out, oh yeah, these people are assholes too, and then fighting against them became repetitive after the governor. Like,
yeah,
season 4 ends that arc. They spent 2 seasons on that. Do a season 3 that is the governor. Do a season 4 that is... Do you need anybody else? Do you need Terminus? Do you need all that shit? Maybe Terminus. Do a season 5 with the Whisperers. Maybe a season 6. I don't know. It seems... Yes, the show's biggest sin is it went on way too long.
I think that they had something there. You have the governor, who is the first shot where we see like a resemblance of civilization coming, but he's just batshit crazy. Then you've got Terminus, which is people that seem like they're welcoming, but they're just cannibals. They're batshit crazy, too. You got Alexandria, which is they're essentially Rick's group. They're well-meaning, but they're just unseasoned. They mm-hmm. were just lucky people that were born into a society, a place where they could pull off something and they could be self-dependent. But they didn't have any plans for like when other hostiles would show up. And then Negan, which is essentially the governor, but smart and like mm-hmm. calculating and not crazy. Like Negan's many things, but I don't think he's like clinically insane. And then you got the Whisperers. And then I guess the Commonwealth would work as like kind of like a final tying the boat. Like, you know, this is like a synthesis of all the big bads that come before. I think that's pretty, but like you just have to move through it, man. Like seven seasons, and just like each season should have been a community that our survivors square off against after the first two, which are essentially just surviving as family groups, you know?
Yeah, I mean, even that would have felt repetitive. I don't know. They needed a hook maybe. More than just like new community. Oh, they're bad too. And that's it. I mean, Alexandria was kind of the only departure from that.
Yeah, because they weren't bad. They were kind of like selfish and lazy, but they weren't evil.
And Dina's son. A little green, right? They just like they didn't know what they were doing.
They didn't know what it's like out there, Jim.
Right,
I think is what you're trying to say. No, and I think the other thing is like it's not just the seasons. It's also the fact that each season was supersized 16 episode season split into two. So you also had weird pacing things. I think if this was a 7-season run of 10 to 12 episodes, that's so much better. And I think that like all this other stuff about like the fact that you'd have to worry about getting bored of zombies and get bored, that stuff doesn't, because you're just like rapidly going through, which I think is pretty good. The material that I saw in the comic book, which almost always better than the decisions they made in the show. Secondly, Aaron says, I wish they'd explored more of the CDC type of stuff. It's really interesting. Research maybe find something pointing towards a cure. Just felt like something they could have explored instead of big bad guy and group X. Do you know that this is, I read an interview from 2020 of Robert Kirkman where he says his biggest regret in the whole of Walking Dead is the CDC episode in season 1. He said it gave away way too much to the survivors. Things that should have been mysterious weren't. The world became larger instead of smaller. It's funny because this is Aaron's favorite part, or double Aaron's favorite part, and it's Kirkman's worst misstep, he says.
I mean, maybe it's a misplaced episode. Maybe season 1 is not where you want to do that, but...
Yeah,
I understand that.
But it's wild if you do it in season 3, like this guy's been holding on like a year or two into the apocalypse. Like it's one of those things where either you shouldn't have done it at all, or that's probably where you do it. I don't know. I like the CDC episode on balance. I thought that's the only one that I really don't like in season 1 is like Vatos, I think is the one.
Sure, sure.
Cohen. Had some thoughts with the penultimate episode. I gotta say that The Walking Dead has blown my fucking mind. After what, in my opinion, is one of the shittiest episodes in season 11, this comeback of an episode is fantastic. There's so much to love, and even if not many people died this episode, it still felt brutal. Lydia losing her arm was unexpected, and I immediately blanched, as she has become one of my favorites. Judith getting shot was sudden, even though I think she'll survive. Daryl's immediate tunnel vision and obvious terror made me feel a lot. That shot of him running through the smoke and haze carrying Judith was moving, especially with the music, which is another thing to talk about in this episode, as I think they absolutely nailed it. Yeah, it seems like Bear really got up for these last few episodes. Mm-hmm. There was some really signature pieces of music being made late season Walking Dead. Cohen says, another thing I liked was Pamela's spiral out of control this whole episode and her decision at the end to just abandon her population in favor of protecting the rich, which I felt was very similar to what happened in, say, Hurricane Katrina, especially with the mention of the wards. I don't know if that was intentional. I know it's not just New Orleans that has wards, like Houston has them too and stuff, but like it, I definitely felt some kinship there.
Yeah, she's a fool though. I mean, what... Okay, so she preserves all her big money donors. where does her workforce come from? Where does her labor come from? Who supplies her with the amenities that she is so used to when her underlings get decimated?
Well, they wouldn't be the first autocratic regime to not really consider the impact of, you know, demonizing and sacrificing your underclasses. You know, like, fuck.
Fair. Fair.
Who's going to take out the trash? Who's going to shovel shit? Who's going to do the laundry?
Who's going to program the timer on the clock on my VCR? Yeah.
As she said in the last episode, who's going to do the jobs no one wants to do? Well, we're going to have a chore list, okay? And we're going to make, yeah.
Sure.
I felt the group desperately fighting through the streets while getting pinned in was intense and reminded me very much of when not only Negan used the same strategy to trap them, but also when the Terminus folks herded them into the A car. There's one more thing I wanted to add that I think might bring back some happy memories of your guys' early Walking Dead podcast, as I've recently been listening to your early season 4 podcast and stumbled upon this gem of a nickname that you guys use for Patrick, the kid who's the first to die in the flu epidemic. This is the prison arc.
Okay.
As you call them, not making this shit up, Boris the pig fucker. Now,
what? Why?
I don't know where the pig fucking came into it, but, and I'm like, why do we call him Boris the pig? I looked this guy up, and it's because he looks exactly like Alan Cummins.
Okay. Okay.
As Boris, the evil Russian hacker in James Bond's GoldenEye installment. So sure. I don't know where the pig fucking came out, but he is. I'll stand by the Boris comparison for sure.
All right.
He was not invincible, in fact. Moving on to Mike from St. Louis says, I'm sure many of us would love a final Al and Joe hot take on The Walking Dead before The Walking Dead yeets off the airwaves. Best of upcoming holiday wishes. Well, thanks, Mike. You know, we've been trying to get Al and Joe nailed down since their disastrous appearance in season 9 of The Walking Dead for us, where they did that unfortunate mishap with Daryl Dixon's drive. And it is like they're cagey. They're cagey, wily negotiators. We still haven't got them. We tried to get him. We thought like, oh, you know what? We'll bring him back because we don't want to watch. What is this show? What's the show that everybody Succession? Loves except for us? Succession. We don't want to watch Succession. Maybe Al and Joe will do Succession for us. And then Jim got cold feet. Like, oh, what if it turns into a fiasco? Can we?
Yeah.
Trust
what
Jim
if these guys
aren't
professional enough to show up each week? You know.
Right. Right. So we couldn't get him. Maybe one of these spinoffs would be a good time for them to return. We just got to get him nailed down the contract. Wondered Object. I can't believe the show is finally ending somewhat. It's truly hard to believe that it's lasted this long. And I want to say a few things. Bald Move, by way of the Watching Dead podcast, taught me an incredible life lesson. You don't owe anyone, or in this the case of The Walking Dead, anything. Let me explain. I used to be one of those people who had to finish things out, even when I wasn't enjoying it. The show was one of those things. I loved the first two seasons, but really came to hate it as the show went on.
Oh, no.
Then Glenn died, and the way they handled that was the last straw for me. Granted, I might have a bigger gripe with AMC and how they handle things, but that's beside the point. But I was so loyal to the show that I kept on watching. It wasn't until you guys decided to stop covering it that I decided to do the same, and damn, my life's been better since. And I've used it in all aspects of my life. Shows, jobs, relationships. If I'm not benefiting from it, then it's best to cut ties. Most recently, I've stopped following my beloved Raiders, and that's been a breath of fresh air. Once you came back, I followed, but I've had no regrets about that. I'm happy to hate watch the show, now knowing that you'll be going to put out an incredible podcast that week. So thanks. Again, question mark?
Yeah, I feel like this would have been a better statement at the end of season 8 when we quit, as opposed to the end of season 12, 14, whatever it is, after we've come back for another few.
Yeah.
But I take your meaning, right? Like, we quit, and then we heard it was good again, and so we came back to it. You know, we thought maybe it would benefit us. I think it's fair to say also, if you quit something and you realize, hey, actually that thing that I quit has either gotten better or my life has changed and it fits in now and I think it would make me happy, I think there's an opportunity to reclaim some of those things. But
yeah
we came back and it hasn't been all roses.
It has not. But it's been a lot of fun. And it's an underrated life lesson that if things suck, you can just bone out. You can just fuck off and bone out and drop out and get the hell out and not spend any more time and energy. But also, yeah, sometimes, you know, it's always good to give something a second look, I guess. I don't know.
It can be. We'll say that.
Wondered says, I do have a bit of sentimental value to this show. My wife and I started dating the month this came out, and it's pretty much our first show we started watching together. She didn't jump back in when I did, but still, it's pretty fun to look at things like that. The show has been with me through our dating years, engagement, marriage, and now two kids. It's just very fun to look at it like that. Went from dating to cohabitating to buying a house to getting married. My son went from being three, probably still working on not shitting his pants, to he just got his driver's license. Like, it's a big chunk of my life here. Like, I've covered The Walking Dead longer than I've ever had a job otherwise, for sure. And it's not even close. It's not even close.
Oh, yeah.
I'll be honest, I might give in and watch a spinoff with Rick or the other ones once the season is released in full. I'll definitely be watching if you guys are. Well, boy, it's putting a lot of pressure on us not to watch these shows. I feel like we're the people like, you know, maybe I'll shoot up heroin again. Yeah, sure. Sure, we're all clean and sober now. But, you know, it was some good times when we were doing it. I feel like maybe we should just not do the heroin.
Yeah, if you guys do it, I'll do it.
Thanks for everything, you guys. Bald Move has been with us through the same stages of life. Both my kids were born on a Friday, so we'd watch a lunch after they were born. LOL, Bald Move is part of the family. Oh, my God. I did not consent to be in the delivery room. I probably saw and heard things I did not sign up to hear and see.
I mean, they probably did, too, but given true. The topics of lunch.
Jesus. Oh, my God. We should have a nightmare birth rotation for, like, what are the worst lunches to listen to while you're going through labor.
Sure.
As voted by the Bald Move moms. Lunch number one. Shanjam says, I think season 11 is actually the worst season. It's boring me to tears. The dialogue was terrible. Artificial dangers left and right. Car crash over nothing. Walkers popping out of nowhere. But I think the worst part is the Commonwealth is the ultimate big bad, falls just way short. They're not scary, not interesting. There's not a real menacing villain. Obviously, The Walking Dead has been going downhill for years, but I think the season's officially the worst. Your thoughts? Where does the season land in your rankings? We'll see how it wraps up, but I'm just ready to get over with and put a bullet in its head. Man, so that's the thing. Season 11 felt like a return to form of The Walking Dead and not in a good way.
Like, yeah, I mean, season 8 is clearly the worst, I think, like, without a doubt. I would put that at the bottom of the list, but... Yeah, I mean, there have been some colossal missteps in season 11. But overall, it hung together, I think, better than season 8.
Yeah, I just... stretching out the Negan arc to three seasons really fucked that up. Really fucked that up pretty bad. It's probably the right answer, and it's the one that, like... It's also the one where the hope kind of died. Because like 4, 5, and 6, I don't think objectively were any better than 2 and 3, the Mizera run. But we had hope that Gimple's like, well, you know, he hasn't had that much experience. And he did write that one episode that kind of like redeemed Lori, even while we were having a Fiesta cast celebrating her death, and kind of made us feel like assholes. And he's got some, I think he's a fan of the material, and he's got... And I don't know, maybe we were one of the ones that made him into a monster, because it turns out he just turned into a guy you couldn't tell a goddamn thing to, because he was the showrunner of a show getting 18 million eyeballs. 36 sure. million eyeballs, because there's each one of those people had two. And you couldn't tell him anything. And he's kind of still like that. Like that thing he wrote, that epilogue he wrote for Rick and Michonne, is embarrassing. And he's bragging about it on all the after shows, so...
Yeah.
But 11, as much as I like Angela Kang, I think that there is just too much bullshit, too much rug pulls, too much pressure to come up with a finale for a show that's not really ending. It's not really ending.
The weight of the Walking Dead franchise was crushing down on her, and I don't know that you could stand up against that weight any better than she did.
Yeah. But I don't know, because like I think the best season is season one.
That's sad. That is sad. Yeah. They should just stop there. Just CDC episode, end of season, done. One and done.
And then I think if we went back and watched season two, that would we would see that as probably the glory years too. Because there was some really stupid shit. The Glenn Wella, like already you can see the strain for making more show for less money. Mm-hmm. But then three, you know, I feel like 4, 5, and 6, where you get the core of the early Gimple years, you got the post-prison arc, you got the beginning of the Negan. There was still this kind of hope that then died beneath the dumpster with Glenn. And the show just never kind of... I don't think the show ever recovered from that.
No.
And if you look at the ratings, you could. I think that's clearly where the rose, the bloom fell off the rose for The Walking
Dead.
It's
where it became apparent what kind of storytellers we were dealing with. People who were not interested in painting compelling characters and compelling narratives. They simply wanted to shock you and surprise you and use that as a crutch to get people to come back next week to see the exciting resolution, right? And that's...
Which you didn't need. There was, again, 18 million people watching this. You were doing fine.
Right.
Why did you have to punch this shit up, man?
No, it was the Glenn dumpster just laid bare all of the sins that The Walking Dead was committing on a weekly basis, and it was no longer ignorable.
Yeah. Sewell's got some strong feelings about the finale. Stink, stank, stunk. Very holiday appropriate here. Awful. Excuse me. Did we not just go through three whole episodes of everyone losing their shit because the Commonwealth took their children? In the first possible moment they can, Judith convinces Carol and fucking Daryl Dixon, the prime person Rick and Michonne asked to take care of her, to take her into a fucking coup at the Commonwealth. Even this show had to remove her plot armor for such negligence, and she jumps in front to save Maggie and Isle of the Dead spinoff. Eugene just out there throwing a fucking cloak and turning onto solid mullet snake, knocking on walls and ambush beating Commonwealth soldiers like the Dark Knight. Where are we going? What are we doing? Well, we're trying to finish this show. I guess if I have to take issue here, is like I didn't have a problem with Judith being brought along because I think she made a pretty compelling point of like, God damn it. The problem is Judith should have been Carl. This should have been Carl's moment of I am taking up my father's torch and I'm a grown ass man, Uncle Daryl. I'm 18, 19, going on 20. I can be risked on these commando missions. And instead, it's an 11-year-old girl who has got a good heart. And yes, all of her reasons for wanting to fight are valid, but she's just 11 years old and it just doesn't work. But we couldn't pay Chandler Riggs too much money to be the star, to be the emotional heart of the show 3 seasons ago. So fuck all that, you know?
Well, it's because they knew they had 6 more seasons to go and they'd probably have to pay him millions by the end of it. And they were like, let's just get somebody new.
They'd have to cut 3 logs out of the Hilltop's wall budget if they paid this guy.
Don't shamble off. We'll be right back after the break. We try to make it super easy to support making podcasts at Bald Move. Just join the club.
But some people aren't the joining type, or maybe they're already in the club but want to add a little bit of gratuity for an especially great season of coverage, or for a podcast that really spoke to them, or gave them that bit of support in a tough time.
For these, and for whatever other reason you might have, our tip jar is always open. Head over to support.baldmove.com and click the donate option to say, hey, keep doing what you're doing. We appreciate it.
Once again, check out support.baldmove.com for all the great ways to help me and Jim keep making the podcast you love.
Welcome back, survivors. Here's even more of The Walking Dead.
Gretchen from Virginia says, the worst possible ending I can imagine AMC coming up The Walking Dead is some kind of end or cure for the zombie virus. Could the evolving walkers be the end of the virus? If everyone is affected, I don't see how. How much is Robert Kirkman involved in the show? In the past, I've been against main character deaths, but come on. Negan never gets any bad karma for all the bashed in heads. Gabriel's forgiven for locking out his parishioners to be eaten. Where's the justice? Gretchen says, P.S., you should read the comics. I plan on it. I've been waiting. I am going to get the omnibuses. I'm either going to buy them or get them from the library. Because the last I read was the beginning of the Whisperer arc. So a shit ton has happened. I would love to compare and contrast. I don't know. I guess, like, I kind of thought maybe the cure for the zombies plague was going to be the end of the, like, you know, that now the humanity's back on a path where they could recover from this.
I mean, that might still be the goal, just not in The Walking Dead, right? In the larger franchise.
Right. And I didn't think it would I guess it would ruin The Walking Dead in the case that The Walking Dead would be over at that point. But I thought that would be a satisfying conclusion of, you know, humans, even in an apocalypse, being ingenious enough or that the virus burns itself out. It'd be really interesting if these smart zombies is like a step in that direction, showing this virus is mutating. So will it eventually mutate into a place where it doesn't reanimate the dead? I don't know.
I don't think it has to be the end of The Walking Dead if there are no zombies. I think they could come out with a show called, like,
After Undead.
Yeah, Undead The Walking Dead, where they've taken all the dead out of The Walking Dead.
Oh, The World Beyond The Walking Dead. That would have been a good one for that.
It could have been, yeah. And you could just have these micro stories about the reestablishment of civilization, right?
Which I always thought would be was such a cool a hook.
I know.
I loved the civilizational reboot attempts, yeah. As far as Robert Kirkman, go ahead.
I was going to talk about justice in The Walking Dead, because, like, there's an inherent assumption built in here, or inherent, like, feeling that the only justice for these people is death. And I think there has been a bit of justice for Negan.
Negan spent
a long ass time in a dank prison cell, in somebody's basement. And he has had a lot of time to think about his actions, to dwell. They've been thrown in his face many times. I think, like, he has changed. And I don't think, you know, if you commit a sin, you deserve death and that's it. Almost no matter how heinous the sin is. I think there can be redemption. There can be justice that is outside the scope of just like, oh, let's kill him.
Plus, Negan had a tragic start. Like, I can easily imagine if Shane had managed to kill Rick. I imagine our group turns out kind of like, you know, Governor Negan. Like, because Shane was on a real bad path. Like, being so fixated on protecting the ones that he loves that he become. I could easily see him become a tyrant. So, like, yeah, I think that that's, like, literally the story of Negan. And I get that, like, if you're a Maggie or a Herschel, that you don't – there's nothing he can ever do to make that up to you. But, like, you know, societally, that's, you know, like, if we left it to the mothers and fathers of slain children to dispense justice, well, then we wouldn't need jails, right? You just kill people because
– Of course.
You know, but that's not kind of how we do it. So I thought that stuff was interesting to explore. And I actually thought some of that stuff, like Gabriel's redemption, not just being, because it's not just enough for people to forgive and move on. You have to forgive yourself, you know, and like his crisis of faith, all that stuff. I thought that was pretty well realized. And I also thought Jeffrey Dean Morgan, you know, like his evolution of Negan through the seasons was pretty good, too. But,
yeah,
you know. I'm not going to argue with anybody. As far as Robert Kirkman being involved, as far as I can tell, Robert Kirkman stopped writing his own comic books. Like he claimed that like at the Savior War that they were halfway through, and like he had this grandiose plans of like it's Carl's going to take over eventually, and it's going to be kind of his story, and blah blah blah, yada yada yada. I think in much less than half of the remaining issues, if he were to write it out with the Savior War being the midpoint, that he wrapped things up in a pretty abrupt fashion is what I heard. So, and I also, he's still credited as an executive producer, just like everybody else, just like the 17 other people. And they just this week, no, 2 weeks ago, dropped a $200 million lawsuit where he's joined by Gail Ann Hurd and I think Mazzara and a few other, everybody was not Darabont.
Everybody who hadn't already got theirs. Yeah.
Yeah, because Darabont settled for $200 million 2 years ago, which feels like this is where the starting price came out. They filed a brand new lawsuit against AMC for them screwing up. So I don't think Robert was that involved in the late stages of The Walking Dead, but he still gets favorable. He still gets favorable interviews like almost every season. Like someone, and he's not talking bad. Probably because that would be actionable. But anyway. Pat says, I know you and many others have been discussing about how the Maggie Negan spinoff can happen. What are the scenarios that will put them together in New York? Speculation is that Herschel and or Annie will die, etc. I've had a horrible thought. The Daryl spinoff will start with Daryl waking up in France and have no idea how he got there. Would AMC possibly do the same thing with Maggie and Negan spinoff? Could they both just,
everybody
both just wake up in New York City with no idea how they got there? I mean, that's a good way to get less than a million people watching it in your first season. Like, if you pull, like, the reverse, it was all a dream. Like, you know, one of those maybe. If Daryl is got briefly and he wakes up in France, he doesn't know how he got there. But, like, you can't do that for everything.
Michonne
really, you shouldn't
goes
do
to
it
sleep
for
one night, wakes up in Canada. Fuck, how'd I get here?
Oh my God. Turns out he's not. He's just been taken to King's Island north of Cincinnati and he sees the Eiffel Tower and he's like, I'm in France. Holy shit.
Jerry falls asleep one night, wakes up in Narnia, goes, how the fuck did I get here? Yeah. Let's do it.
Christopher says, clearly you guys haven't watched The World Beyond. The three circles are from the CRM, the group Jadis took Rick to. That's the Civil Correct. Republic Military. I have not watched The World Beyond.
Not watched it. Have no plans to watch The World Beyond.
Probably super fascinating stuff in there, but I'm barely die hard enough to finish this series, let alone start another. I mean, they fooled me once with The Fear of the Walking Dead. Remember when we were excited about that?
Yeah.
Wow. We'll get the actual see the fall of L.A. and that's going to be fucking awesome. And they yada yadded through it
for a second time. Yeah.
Jesus. Matt Wood. Are you guys glad you made the decision to come back to this show after a break? What seasons were your favorite? What seasons are your least favorite? And last, what are your thoughts on the numerous deviations from the comics the show has taken over the years? Cheers. And I look forward to new episodes of your other shows. Well, thanks, Matt. I am glad that we came back to The Walking Dead, actually. I thought, because you might not know this, but we rage quit season 9. Our friend Jason Kabasi from The Talking Dead called me and wanted to know if I wanted to get, for old time's sake, together with him and do some random early episode season 9 thing with him and his co-host. And I'm like, sure, I would love to do that. So I watched, I think, the first 3 episodes of The Walking Dead in season 9 and like an icy grip, a hand gripped my heart like, oh, my God, maybe we fucked up. The new showrunner. This stuff is looking kind of cool. And I felt like maybe we'd made I think we'd always kind of like in the back of our mind thinking we were making a mistake because we walked away from The Walking Dead when it's still a pretty big show for us. It's still a pretty big show for us. But like, you know, it was really bad. And Jim was starting to feel like, I think your thought is like, we are killing ourselves professionally because like, how can people take us seriously when we're covering something that's like really good when we're covering this gutter show and we're just doing it because it's got numbers? Like what?
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah, and it was just getting to be week after week watching this terrible show, knowing that I had to come up with, you know, my 1,000-word essay on it. Yeah, it was becoming not fun for me.
Yeah. So taking a break, coming back to it in the pandemic where, you know, like this is big unprecedented thing, gave us the kind of the cover to kind of like go back and catch up to where we're at and try to catch up to where the show was. And, you know, the community kind of got behind us because what else the hell are you going to do in the middle of a pandemic where you're stuck outside and do all that? I honestly, it's all worked out the best. And I feel like as long as we're always trying to do things for the right, you know, like staying and covering the show that we hated because it got good numbers is an AMC thing to do. Right. Fucking bailing on the show and coming back chasing 2.5 years later in the middle of a global pandemic, that's a fucking bald move thing to do. And we will continue
when we
to
hear
do
that
those things.
That it's actually getting good again, right? Like, so I also want to say, like, one of the big reasons we quit was because I have this strong feeling that, like, and this is true, like, no press is bad press. And the more we talk about The Walking Dead, the more it encourages people to buy into this bad show. And there's so much good television out there. We're going to spend our time focused on this. Why? And that was really weighing on me in the depths of season 8 when it was just a garbage fire of a show. You know, and once season 9 comes back and is under new direction and is reportedly pretty good, as reported by my co-host here, who had seen a few episodes, I'm like, okay, man, we'll see how it goes. And then season 9 was pretty good overall. And it was like, all right, maybe it's time to come back to this because it's a show that I can honestly point people to and say, this is worth your time.
Yeah.
And it was just like season after season was not worth people's times in the middle of this thing. And I felt bad pointing people to it and saying, this is a thing I'm watching, and letting that be some kind of indicator of its quality. Mm-hmm. The fact that we're covering it, I think, is an indicator of its quality.
Mm-hmm.
And to some degree, when we have a limited amount of time that we can devote to shows, us giving it any coverage seems like we're sanctioning it at least a little, or we're encouraging people to watch it at least a little bit. So I was very much feeling the weight of that.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, but then I guess we're gratified that lately it's not, I'm still watching because of you guys. It's mostly, I'm not even watching anymore. I'm just listening to your, that's the best case scenario.
It
where
is.
You're just supporting us. You're not giving any eyeballs to AMC, and you're not selling yourself by the physical act of watching the show. We are your hazmat suits. We do this stuff so you don't have to.
Yeah, we're releasing our coverage of Andor pretty soon for our club members. Around Off the Clock. And I did the same thing with Star Wars. I said Star Wars sucks right now. Star Wars is garbage. They haven't made anything good in 25 years. Way longer than that. I mean, they haven't made anything good in ages. I can't cover these shows. And so I didn't. I said, I'm not covering Andor. I'm not even going to watch Andor until I hear that Star Wars has turned it around. And I heard that Star Wars turned it around. And so we did a couple of episodes on it. I really want to cover season 2 if we have the time in our schedule when it drops. I just don't feel like I can honestly point people to shows with my coverage of that show if it's not a good show. Even if I'm having fun podcasting it.
Yeah, sometimes at some point you feel like a obligation to the brand and to the community to not steer them awry. What's funny, like I don't know, maybe it's because we're not publicly traded. If we're publicly traded, we'd be a lot worse off. But like, yeah, it's like if AMC zealously guarded their brand as half as well as we try to watch after the pips. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Carly says, I was listening to an old Ty and That Guy podcast, and they're talking about the value of good writing. I know that Ty Frank, and of course, this is one half of the dynamic writing duo that came up with the Expanse series, the mm-hmm. books and the television series we love so much. What if Ty Frank was hired to write for a Walking Dead spinoff? Would you watch it then?
Oh, boy. Probably. I would want to see what he does with this world.
Yeah,
I still wouldn't have any faith that his vision could be realized in a meaningful way because the constraints of budget there might not allow for it. Mm-hmm. But I would at least give it a try. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, pedigree, especially when it comes to writers and directors, carries not so much actors.
Yeah.
You know, like I remember, man, what the heck? I was thinking, like, I remember when I was a kid, I really loved Star Wars, right? And I thought, I just was in love with Mark Hamill as Luke Skywalker. And I watched The Night the Light Went Out in Georgia. Just because Luke Skywalker starred in it. And now I learned at a very early age, I was about 6 years old, that just because someone that you liked in one thing is in another thing doesn't mean it's good.
Yeah.
Now, I will say that like directors and writers, that pedigree is a little bit more because they're actually generating the ideas. They're not just a face. So like, mm-hmm. yeah, if I heard that like Damon Lindelof was going to do The Walking Dead because he got in the wild, like, oh, you can say a lot with Frank, or I heard Ty Frank, or I heard that like Craig Mazin is going to do a zombie show, which he is, The Last of Us. Yeah, I would be super interested in that way more than I would be. I was a lot more interested in the Daryl Dixon show when I found that Angela Kang was show running it. But she got kind of squeezed out or booted out, or they moved it to France and she didn't want to move to France. I don't know exactly. Now she's doing some kind of Marvel thing. But yeah, I would be much more inclined if they had that kind of pedigree.
Mm-hmm.
Mike, like you, I was fully intending to stop watching after this, but the AMC suits got me with those final Rick scenes. Was that Giancarlo Esposito in the helicopter loudspeaker? My God, if they got him, I'm all in on the Rick series, especially if he's a twisted military officer for the CRM, the helicopter people, the three ring symbol. Just when I thought I was out, they pulled me back in. Now, I could not confirm or deny. I saw a lot of people speculating as if it did sound like Giancarlo Esposito. Obviously, I didn't think so, because if I did, I would have talked about it. But this goes back to Mark Hamill. It just because you get Giancarlo Esposito, and it makes a lot of sense for AMC to try to continue that relationship, because, you know, we see HBO tends to have a stable of people and mm-hmm. AMC kind of has that. It would make sense. But like him being the villain of a show is not enough for me. Single-handedly.
I mean, take a look at the show Revolution. Giancarlo Esposito was in that.
I did take a look at it.
I watched some of it too. It's not an amazing show.
No. The Boys is pretty good. He's a big villain in that, but he's really good in a really good show. I've seen him be really good in a terrible show, and mm-hmm. I've seen him be really good in a mediocre show. Giancarlo Esposito tends to be really good in whatever he's in. So not enough to get me back, but I'd probably watch Rick. I'd probably watch the first couple episodes of Rick just to see. Ben says, man, what a big piece of my life you two have been lately. I had dropped from Walking Dead mid All Out War for reasons you can't imagine. After hearing about Carl and Rick, I just didn't care. I still kept myself wondering. And last year I started rewatching some of my old favorite shows and The Walking Dead made the cut. Once I hit where I left off, I decided to keep going and I binged up to season 11. And then I found your podcast, which I inhaled. After binging the shit out of you two, I'm finally caught up. He got caught up just on the precipice of the finale.
All right.
Now I'm about to watch the finale, but I'm more excited about listening to your podcast. It's for the first time ever, I'll be listening to your show as it drops. It's been a wild 6 months binging you guys, from laughing at Dying on the Hill that was Negan being pronounced like Megan, to saying that you... I remember that. To saying you're done with the show, if insert... terrible writing that The Walking Dead would inevitably pull off, and how excited I was in skipping ahead to season 11's coverage here and there, and still hearing you guys calling out how Maggie was just never gave a shit about Doodlebug, and the fact that you still mm-hmm. called her Doodlebug. Thanks for all the entertainment, and you've made me a hardcore Bald Move fan who will be backing you, presumably at support.baldmove.com. You love to hear it. We converted a listener into a follower through our stupid The Walking Dead show, Jim.
Yeah, I guess if there's one positive that's come from this show, a lot of people found us through this thing and somehow they stuck with us. I think like that's going to be more likely to happen in these later seasons because you already know what kind of show you're in for. I just wonder like how many people were with us early on when the show was actually good and are still here. After 10 seasons of us shitting on the show, essentially.
A fair bit to be like, you know, when it comes up amongst the community. I mean, we heard in Lunch the last few weeks, like this is a big end of an era for a lot of people. And there's still like, mm-hmm. we still got a lot more stuff like this to get through, too. So, yeah, like, yeah, this has been maybe not our best net to drag people into the community, but it's been one of our biggest, longest, most well-constructed nets, like in terms of the number of episodes, in terms of the amount of time we've been doing it, in terms of like the consistent tone and quality of it. Like, yeah, long tail in this project.
Yeah, I'm glad you were able to catch up before it ended.
Yeah, it's pretty sweet.
Yeah, that's a crazy commitment. Binge. That's a
lot. You churned through some hours, dude.
Uh-huh.
JP says this show started off very good and I loved it. It's never been an A+ show. Even the Hollow Ground of season one had two shit episodes, Vatos and the CDC, out of six. There's little point in discussing the politics of AMC, budgets, and cynical approaches to show running that have been done to death by more informed commentators than me. For me, the show has just stayed ahead of CW level crap with a C+ average. Mm-hmm. Some thoughts overall, though. The comics always seemed ahead of the show, so there was a clear and successful blueprint to follow, but at almost every fork in the road where a creative decision needed to be made, the showrunner or writer at the time made the wrong one, and other than all the external factors, the biggest flaw of the show has been a compound effect of poor creative decision after poor creative decision. Agreed! Mm-hmm. Even those which are considered a success, like the inclusion of Daryl. By creating Daryl, the ongoing comic narrative of Rick's rotation of right-hand men and women went up in a puff of smoke. Shane, Tyrese, Abraham, Dwight, Andrea, Carl was a rotation which created emotional investment and trauma when one went to be replaced for another, as well as brand new dynamics. Half of these characters fell by the wayside because Daryl was an ever-present, and while this created certain opportunities for the long-term story which paid off, for me, it resulted in an overall net loss. You know, this is a solid point that, like, creating Daryl Dixon undid that engine where Rick always had to find someone else that he could rely on and changed him as a character and changed the group dynamic. And because he always had Daryl, and Daryl was never going to turn against Rick. It's unthinkable or push him in any way.
Till the one time they fought in a Walker pit. Yeah.
Right. That just made them even more bros and they got out. In my opinion, the show put together some grade A episodes. The pilot is flawless. Pilot is one of the best pilots I've ever seen. The season two finale, the big barn blowout palooza.
What is this? Shotgun. Was that the What Is This episode?
No, it's not that. That's the one where they're just driving around pumping headshots into zombies. Michonne got introduced and they leave the farm.
Herschel shooting over people's shoulders with a shotgun. Yeah.
The season six finale and viewed in tandem with season seven, episode one. I guess that's the head smashing one. That seems about right. The first one, anyway.
Okay.
Because we got two head smashes.
I really dislike the head smashing one. The Negan head bash.
Well, because they fucked it up.
Because it was such a cheap ass cliffhanger. Yeah, it was the worst.
They fucked it up. They zigged on the comics just to, you know, keep the listeners or watchers engaged. These are the exceptions, though, and I said there's maybe one grade A arc, what's the often overlooked six episode run where they first came to Alexandria. The Whispers is a close second, but this always dragged on for me too long. Borderline. I did run out of gas at the very end of season 10. By the end, we had a season finale which killed off Sela's character, who had less than 5 minutes of screen time in 3 years, and Rosita. When she fell into the herd, I thought they were actually going to go for it, but immediately felt deflated when she neoed her way out. In terms of the finale itself, as a means of wrapping up the crap that came before it, it didn't make a lot of sense. They nailed the emotional beats. Maggie, Negan, Rosita, Eugene, Gabe, Coco, Carol, Daryl, Judith, even Luke's deathbed were all well done. And the Luke scene deserves a shout out because I didn't think I could give a fuck about any of these characters. Yeah, watching it got me thinking, when do we actually see raw emotion like that in the show? I suppose the finale summed up the show well. Great actors doing a great job in spite of a logical script, cheap SFX, good practical FX, all undermined by cynical money-grabbing ventures on a part of AMC. Yep. It's summed a faithful, up The Walking Dead. Faithful finale. Nicole says, hey guys, thanks so much for getting me through to the end. I was so glad to know I wasn't alone regarding the last 10 minutes. Gimple's final flourish worked about as well as a Band-Aid on a shark bite. I had no idea what the context of time and space was between them or what led to Barefoot Rick and Michonne's brand new battle gear. Rick or no Rick, there's no excuse big enough in the world to smooth over Michonne's abandoning her kids for a couple of years in the zombie apocalypse, especially when a huge part of her story is losing her first child to zombies when she was gone on a supply run. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, that's the problem when you go 11 seasons. You got to write Danai Gurira off the show, even though she should not be written off. But you don't want to kill her because you want to bring her back for the movie. But you can't.
This is where finance, this is where commerce clashes with art. And yeah, the art needed her to die if she needed to leave the show. The commerce demanded that she did not. So which option do you think AMC went with?
And Commerce also demanded, as her, you know, as her name rose and she got attached to Marvel Pictures, that they could no longer afford her. So like, exactly. It's yeah. And hustling through the plot would have solved all those problems likely. Nicole says, I can't wait for Chris Hardwick's tell-all memoir to come out in a couple of years. Tall Tales of the Walking Dead, How I Stayed Alive for 12 Seasons. Thanks again, and see you for The Last of Us. For sure.
That is a book I would absolutely buy. If it were framed that way. I'm not going to buy the like fluff piece that is Chris Hardwick's autobiography that fellates Glenn Mazzara and Scott Gimple for 500 pages.
I want to know about all the fucking diva shit that Scott Gimple pulled behind the scenes and all the
I just wanted I want him to deep dive into his own psychology during the Walking Dead years. Like I know it's money. I know it's money at its core and a career in Hollywood. I get that and that's understandable, but I want to know day to day, how did you feel doing this thing that you knew you were a shill for?
Yeah, you are seeing tweets coming in from the Glenn dumpster dive, and you're trying to fish out the one positive thing. Like, what's going on in your mind? You're live. This is live television, right. I think, at this point in the series.
I think it was, yeah.
Because I thought I saw real fear in his eyes a few times.
he didn't want to go back to another season of... Fuck, what was it? Heartbreakers? What was his MTV dating show? I can't remember.
Hey, don't shamble off. We'll be right back after the break. Welcome back, survivors. Here's even more about The Walking Dead. Okay, man, we got so many great pieces of feedback here. Hannah says, I think I always felt like the show would end with a higher casualty count. Maybe that's part of me very much missing the anyone can die vibe of earlier seasons. Perhaps my lack of interest in many of the later introduced characters left me hopeful for more interesting deaths. While I did like Rosita and was touched by her passing, it lacked a shock of when poor Noah was torn apart in front of Glenn. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It always thrilled me about the show. The love-hate feeling I had with Beth died when Beth died made me vocally scream at my TV set, but coming back for more on next Sunday. I'm curious who you think they could have killed in a more shocking, sudden way that compete with the likes of Noah and Junebug. So... one thing about us saying that the season 11 is the worst season is I wish we could watch season 11 with the memory of the spinoffs flashed from our mind, because there were several scenes I think we talked about that would have been genuinely terrifying or whatnot, but we knew that Negan couldn't die or Maggie couldn't die or Carol couldn't die or Daryl couldn't die. Even though it's late season Walking Dead, we should have been on high alert every single time they were in danger. So like, that sucks that the show kind of neutered their own engine. So, like, what would be the point of... yeah, so, like, who could they kill in a more shocking, sudden way? Like, any of the kids? Jerry would have been a big one. Aaron? Sure. But, like...
yeah.
Gabe is just Rosita Jr., right?
Rosita Jr.? Okay.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, did he not come after them? I know that they kind of appeared around the same time, but I think he came in Johnny lately.
Mm-hmm.
But
you're right.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think they could have, because the ones that could have generated that kind of emotion were the crown jewels in spinoff shows.
Yeah, I think for me is they kind of had already killed any real emotional attachment I had to these characters. Like occasionally they'd squeeze out a couple of drops of emotion in like what they considered their biggest, most perfect emotionally charged scenes. Like it would almost get back to a place where I cared about these characters, but I have long since lost any feeling for these characters because they've become, I mean, you can only see Daryl in danger so many times and go, well, he's going to get out of it. You can only see these characters make stupid decisions all the time and continue to care about them for so long. And I just, these characters aren't people at this point. These characters are characters. They're just like pieces to be moved around a board, not people to be worried about. So I don't think there's anything they could have really done to wring a ton of emotion out of me, because the show had long passed that point.
And it's hard to do a counterfactual where we watched the last two seasons not knowing about the spinoffs and not knowing that Rick and Michonne are still out there and not know, like, you know.
Yeah.
It's hard to say. But, like, I think my comments on the finale stand. I think they did as good a job as they could have done with the materials they had that they could do things with. Including the showrunner, who had already been spurned, probably knew it at that point.
I mean, it's so exploitative. Like, they're nakedly trying to exploit my emotions at every turn, and that just makes me resist it even more, right? Like, you get the cliffhangers of, like, oh, who's Negan gonna kill? He bashed somebody, but who was it? Like,
it's so stupid. Man, it makes me mad so about cheap. All.
I know.
Especially since the guiding principle seemed to be we can't do exactly what the comics do. Because if we did that, right, we bore the comic. And, like, I've said this a million times. At the height of The Walking Dead's popularity, mm-hmm, in comic form, it had a circulation of just under 200,000 people. At the height of The Walking Dead's popularity, the show had 18 million. Why the fuck are you changing shit? Because you want to surprise the comic book fans. That's like, yeah, like Peter Jackson having Frodo die to Shelob because, well, people are expecting her to be safe, so it'd be real. Like, well, then who's going to throw the fucking ring in the crack at Doom? Like, and I forget who the emailer said that, like, is the compounding poor storytelling choices where, mm-hmm, the show is like a zombie forced to tread in the steps of its comic book forefather, but it kept zigging, but it was still forced to follow that same path. So when you get to these events, like, you'd get the events with half the people that are gone that made the storytelling beats work, or they're fundamentally different characters, or so, like,
I just uninvest emotionally, yes, from any of it, because I can see nakedly what they're doing, what they're trying to do, which is wring a dollar bill out of me.
Lena said, just want to say thanks for such a fun ride at The Walking Dead. Well, thanks, Lena. This is how I found y'all, so I'm especially grateful for the show. Again, pretty big net we've cast here. Although I've stopped watching when y'all did, I still have listened to every podcast and was so excited during COVID that you came back. My only wish is we get one last final feral Daryl from Aaron before we put the show up. I don't know, Daryl, you think you got one more left in you?
Nah! Nah!
All right. That's it. It's the last one.
Nah!
Kate says, who has a list of bullet point questions for us? Who is your favorite and least favorite character on the show? While you're thinking about it, she parenthetically says, for me, it's Carol, Herschel, Senior, obviously, and Daryl for favorites. Least favorite
even
would be
dead
Dwight.
Ones. Okay.
Yeah. Boring, unlikable, poor man's Daryl Dixon, Dwight. Favorite character? I mean, it's pretty hard to beat Daryl Dixon. I mean,
sure.
He was the original He Dies Be Riot character, right?
Mm-hmm, totally.
And Carol being the more impressive because she was such a kind of like nothing character for the first two or three seasons. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's probably Carol. Ultimately, I don't know. They tried to squeeze out the parent arc with Daryl and at the very end here, and I feel like they got 90% of the way there, and that was pretty good. But Carol had like a really satisfying arc over tons of seasons. So probably Carol's my favorite.
Least favorite character? I'm still going with Lori.
It's Magna. Man. Magna.
Oh,
it might be recency bias, but it's Magna.
Yeah.
For a couple of reasons, because A, she sucked for 90% of her screen time, but then she stopped getting screen time at the end of it. It kept sucking somehow, yeah.
When she stops getting screen time and she's still sucking. Like I said, Lori for me, such a character assassination too. That's why I was originally impressed by Gimple, is like that he backed us the fuck off of that Lori death fiesta, that like we did it because we said we were going to. Mm-hmm. But like after I saw that episode, I felt like such an ass. Like if you listen to that podcast, it's funny because we're just like, we feel like so bad for the fiesta. But like also, here's the fiesta. Favorite and least favorite villain. Weird flex, but I thought Stephen Ogg as Negan's henchman in the end of season 6 stands out as my favorite, even more so than Negan himself. Least favorite's got to be the Slaptown police lady or Jadis. Oh, I know God, we've Jadis. Since learned that it was all an act, but come on, the post-apocalyptic trash person dialogue. That point is literally less than 10 years since the world is normal and you're talking like that. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I was wrong about my least favorite character. It's Jadis. I fucking hated Jadis. it was... I don't care that it was a ruse, that it was all a put on. It sucked. Every second she was on screen was torture.
And to the extent that's a ruse, that's like, I think, mostly World Beyond details. So I don't even, like, she's still a weirdo that, like, they tried to ship with Father Gate. Like, boy, best trade up in the history is moving from Jadis to Rosita, right? If you're Gabe.
Absolutely, yeah. There are just so many bad characters on this show. It's hard to nail down. I forget some of the bad characters. Like Gareth, I didn't think was a very good character. But there's so many of them, and some of them are minor, right? Like Tasha Yar shows up in this show.
Yeah.
As serving up a hot plate. Crazy cannibal character at some point.
Here's one. How about Shane? Favorite villain?
Yeah, Shane's good.
I love Shane as I hated Shane, but I loved him as an antagonist. He was great.
Yeah, villain.
Least favorite. I mean it's kind of cheating to say Jadis, but yeah, Jadis.
But definitely Jadis.
I can't think. I'm like that's like yeah. I don't know if anyone ever like maybe the governor. I think David Morrissey was a terrible choice for the governor. Because the governor in the comics is not supposed to be a nice guy that you're kind of taken in by. He's clearly a sleazy bad guy the whole time, and they bring this kind of charming guy and give him a love affair with Andrea and all that. Yeah, nah. I think he's amongst my least favorite.
Yeah, I don't know if I take him out of the context of the comics. I think there was like a season there where it could have been good if they had not drug it out that long.
Well, there again, yeah, that was just a season three and done.
Yeah,
but when do you think the show is that? Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was gonna say, I guess once you like smear shit on the prison walls, you don't want to undo all that work. I mean, it took a lot of time for the crew to smear shit on the prison walls. You need to this keep that around for two seasons.
This is true. When do you think the show is at its best? And Kate says, parenthetically, despite inconsistencies, for me, it's seasons 2 through 4 up until they meet Father Gabriel. Upon rewatch, it's where the wheels truly start falling off, in my opinion. Of course, there are some highlights after that, but they were few and far between. Yeah, I think where I thought the wheels fell off was when we got to the Hunter arc and they fucked all that shit up just to make pointless changes to. That's where it's like, oh, the Gimple thing is going to be the same as the Mizera arc. The show is at its best, I think, season one, but I also think there was something that they could have had going from 4 to 6, and they fucked it up with the Abraham, Glenn, and the, you know, head smash reveal, and especially the Glenn dumpster. Like, season 7, I think, is the thing that really killed The Walking Dead for me. And I was just kind of shambling along for 2 seasons. But I think 4 through 6 had that kind of... Because, man, the finales were... Do you remember that? Like, we get so fucking pissed off at the mid-season where this thing's flailing around and bitching about the 16 episodes. And then the finales were amazing. And the season premieres were amazing. We're like, fucking hell yeah, Gimple's finally got the shit together. He's made the step forward. He's taken a big stride forward. And then... We get to mid-season 5, and it's all bullshit again.
Yeah, I agree with your season assessment.
Show that it's worse, she says, is season 6 through 9. We're going to say season 8, right?
Oh, yeah.
Any deaths that stand out as particularly impactful, whether for gruesome or emotional reasons. Obviously, at Glenn and Abraham, she cites the governor chopping into Herschel's neck will always stick out as a bad one. The episode where Tyrese dies fucked me up. Not sure if you guys remember, but it starts off tricking the audience into thinking the group is mourning Beth when we come full circle to see they're actually burying Tyrese. One of the better written episodes of the whole run. Noah getting ripped up. That's the one.
Yeah.
Noah getting pushed up against the glass door and getting filleted alive while you're looking right into his face is one that always kind of sticks out to me.
I mean, the Lori death was rough. That was if I had to pick one, you wouldn't have guessed it leading up to it, but the moments of her death were really sad. Yeah.
You know, Scott Gimple, say what you will, he did deliver that banger of an episode. And I don't know, maybe that was like C-plus dialogue given to like really good actors. And then you had Lori and like poor fucking Carl's there bawling his eyes out and Maggie's ball. Like yeah, I mean, it's hard to not feel something for a mother in that situation. So, let's see. Anything you wish you could have seen on screen other than a zombie baby? She says swearing. I'll never understood how the TV powers that be were okay with a watching a man get a skull beaten in or attempted rape of Carl, but not with people in the zombie apocalypse dropping the occasional F-bomb.
It comes to a crescendo, an amazing, completely neutered crescendo when Rick turns around on the bridge or whatever he did and says they don't know who they're screwing with.
Yeah.
And we all know what that line was supposed to be. And it just, it's so weak. It's just completely impotent when you say screw versus fuck. Yeah.
It just really said, it just makes, you just know you're watching a TV show.
Uh-huh. Pulled me right out of it.
Yeah. Any favorite memories or in jokes that have transpired from covering the show? She says barley equals intellect still cracks me up.
Yeah.
Reg's cold rolled steel is really funny.
Anytime we did a skit around something, those memories are just like stuck in my head forever. Cooking with Carol, like you mentioned the Ezekiel Renfair stuff, like all that is so good.
Yeah, and there's the one that I think always makes me laugh the most, and it's my own joke, so I don't know what to tell you about that. Where the episode where I think it was Andrea shot Daryl by mistake. I had this bit going where every time Andrea came around the corner of the Herschel Hart, I made it like that she took aim and shot at somebody. And the one I had with Lori was like, oh my God, this frail zombie with the straw like hair. You can tell she was once beautiful, but death has robbed her. And it's just Lori. It's just fucking Lori because I just hated her so much.
Yeah.
That one. I remember back in the day listening to that and cracking myself up. So every once in a while, I come up with a good one. On reflection, when do you think would have been the best time for the show to end? And here's the thing. I think it's appropriate for them to end at the Commonwealth. This should just be the end of season 7.
Yeah, yeah.
If every major arc was like imagine if the Savior arc was 16 banger episodes. If the Whisperer arc was 16 banger episodes, if the Commonwealth arc was six, I think this is a show that probably, if it's ending around the same time as Game of Thrones, we're probably saying it beats Game of Thrones. And if they just do the same thing, they just hurry up. They just do the hurry up offense on it. Because Game of Thrones shit the bed.
Yeah. Game of Thrones really let us down in the final season. So sure, I can see this squeaking out a win. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Because it was one of the few crossover, like people were taking this genre piece at face value as a golden age television show, and it just consistently shit the bed. So,
and I don't want anybody to misconstrue that and say that Jim thinks Walking Dead could have been a better show than Game of Thrones. No, I think Game of Thrones 1 through 5 seasons are almost beyond reproach. They're amazing television. The Walking Dead never hit the heights of Game of Thrones ever until Game of Thrones completely shits the bed at the end. Then maybe The Walking Dead can win the final season.
Yeah. And it's, to be fair, I think we retroactively see the Game of Thrones bed shitting stretching back to season 6.
Sure.
It's just we kept thinking surely they're going to someplace that's going to be good and it's going to make all this make sense. And no. So, like, yeah, it would have been an interesting conversation if Walking Dead had done, like, and also the massive amount of profits they made at the height of this show. If they had put that in to make the sets better and the zombie effects even greater and the special effects, but it just kept on getting cheaper and cheaper and cheaper as things went on. It's a real what if. It's one of the greatest what ifs in my television critic career is, like, what if AMC had put money back into this show and try to make it truly great.
What if Darabont for the entire run of this? Yeah.
Yeah. Because that's the Darabont plan. He's like, oh, well, I made 6 episodes on a shoestring budget as a proof of concept. Now you want me to make 16? Cool. Can I have like 3 times the budget? Oh, I'm getting less. Fuck you. Like, what if they had just said, well, of course you're going to get 3 times the budget. And in fact, 4 times. Make it even better, Frank. God, yeah, what do
you need? You tell us what you need. We'll make it happen. Yeah.
Yeah. The HBO strategy. Matt from Sacramento says, in a finale episode, A-Ron was pondering how much time he'd spent podcasting about The Walking Dead. Thought it might be around 500 hours. It's got me curious as I've listened to all your coverage of the show and too wondered how much of my life I've spent thinking about this roller coaster of a show. So I took the time and did the math. In total, you've spent approximately 383 hours talking about The Walking Dead. This breaks down in approximately 272 hours of recap episodes, 16 hours of instant takes, 28 hours of season preview wrap-ups, 19 hours of pure feedback episodes, and 48 hours of live watches. As best I can tell, you did live watches for each episodes for season 6, 7, and 8. A few other notable facts. Your shortest episode was 33 minutes for episode 103, Tell It to the Frogs.
Okay.
Unbelievable that we did a 30-minute episode on an hour television show.
We used to shoot for an hour-long podcast. That doesn't happen anymore. Yeah, wild. Also, that it was the good part of The Walking Dead where it was so short. Those were rewatch episodes. Those were like, let's hurry up and get caught up for season 2.
Yeah. Your longest recap episode is 2 hours and 36 minutes for the season 5 finale.
Christ. Honker.
Your average length of recaps comes in at 1 hour and 32 minutes.
Sounds right.
There you go. Did the math. Adam in. So this guy tweeted, I talked about this, I think, on lunch. He tweeted at me that he had started watching us in eighth grade, and he's finishing up with the series. And he elaborated this in email. Adam says, my God, where to even begin? I was in eighth grade and 13 years old when I started listening to The Walking Dead. My worst nightmare, by the way. Even though that's definitely too young to be listening to your podcast, my bad. Mm-hmm. It's something I'm so glad I found. Between seasons 2A and 2B, I'd caught up with the comics and needed more Walking Dead content. I tried this new thing called podcasts I'd never touched before. It was 2010, I think, so they're still somewhat new. I immediately loved the show, and it was awesome to interact with a group of people who also love The Walking Dead and your podcast. I think the first time you read one of my emails was on TS19 when you went back to cover season 1. I remember writing about Jennifer whispering to Rick that everyone was infected. I also said the virus might be a government conspiracy. Definitely hits a bit different now. I think it's hilarious that we were reading a 13-year-old's feedback on our podcast and had, you know, good on you, man, because I didn't, I don't remember ever thinking like, oh, Jesus Christ, a 13-year-old's writing us in. So good job. Good job blending in with the olds, Adam. I listened to your show for the next 78 years until you guys finally decided to call it quits. I'd actually stopped watching a few episodes prior, but I still listened to the podcast. Once you guys picked up the show again and seemed to be having a good time, I binged the stuff I hadn't seen to catch up, and now we're here. So crazy to me that this series is coming to an end, even though there will be 6 spinoffs. I listen to so many of your other shows now, and you guys and the whole Bald Move crew has been such genuine and real people that I swear it's shaping into a better person. I know how ridiculous that sounds, but I was barely a teenager when I started listening, and I honestly feel like the way you guys talked about the world, people, media, and so on had a major influence on me. Your open-mindedness and emphasis on not just being on just being a good, honest person is something I've held on to. I don't know if we properly prepared you for this world you live in, Adam, but fuck it. It's the way I've always gone, so let's just go down swinging with the good, honest people thing, all right? Anyways, this is way too long of an email, but it's really crazy to me that as I turn 25 in a few weeks, I've therefore been listening to this podcast for about half of my life. I'll continue to support you guys and listen to whatever shows you cover that I also enjoy. Listening to Walking Dead has been an awesome experience, but also surprisingly impactful on my life. If you're ever in Vancouver, BC, I'll buy you guys a beer or 6. Well, thank you, Adam. That's very touching and semi-unbelievable. That we have been half of someone's life. That's fucking incredible and very touching.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of the few shows that we can that anyone could really claim that, right? Like, okay, you do a six season show and a 6-year-old writes in and says, I'm 12 now, I started listening when I was 6. I don't want that on my resume. I do, definitely don't. But like,
yeah.
A 13-year-old turning 25 saying you were half my life. I I feel that. And then this is one of the few shows we could do. The other one was Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul, because that was a similar amount of time in a universe, though it wasn't one show. I'm always blown away by this because I have similar experiences with podcasters who I've been listening to for over a decade. And they do shape who you become, I think, especially at an impressionable age in your teens where you're trying to figure that out too. I'm glad you feel we've been a positive influence. I hope we don't have the counterpoint. Somebody writing in says, like, I'm a burnt out, washed up 25-year-old and you fuckers ruined me.
I had a bright future ahead of me. I was most likely to succeed in high school and now I've hit the skids. Because I tried heroin because Jim and Aaron made it sound cool, and that's wrap-up episode of The Walking Dead.
No, but I'm grateful for this email because it does make me feel like it makes me think about how much of my own life has transpired under the cloud of The Walking Dead, and I feel like it's been good, and this goes all the way back to the beginning of Bald Move. So,
well, I just had a recent experience. Mike from the Penny Arcade crew just tweeted that they've been doing this for 25 years.
Wow.
Yeah. So for more than half of my life, I've been following these bumblefucks and their stupid comic about video games. And I've gone away, I've come back, I've gone away, I've come back, I've gone to their cons. But like they've been like this big, you know, and like so much of Bald Move is modeled on them. So I get it. Like I do get it. But it's one of those things where it's like it's almost too big to take in.
Yeah.
You know, like when someone says, you know, we got countless emails of like, you know, my mom or dad just died at the hospital and the only thing that's got me through is your guys' podcast and stuff. Like when you hear things like this or like I first found you when I was 13, now I'm 25, spent half my life with you. It's like it's so I don't know what to say, but it is very touching. And
yeah, it's something you don't think about often. But
yeah, I makes me think because I've always, you know, we started doing this in our mid. You're in early 30s. I was in my mid 30s, kind of, I think.
I was like 28. I was in my late 20s when we started this.
But we weren't like, yeah, I see some of these kids on Twitch and YouTube and they're famous at like 18. And, you know, I think we've always spent a little bit of thought about like, how do we approach this stuff? How do we talk about things? How do we build a community that I don't think we would have done if we were younger men? And I'm so fucking glad when I hear shit like this. You know,
right? Because you're going to affect people's lives one way or another, whether you intend
into
or not.
Do it, you know, better than worse. So, but yeah, I appreciate you taking the time to lay it all out for us, Adam. And yeah. Hopefully, we've got much more of our lives ahead of each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, at some point, maybe we'll have been 80% of your life. Oh my god.
Oh yeah. Yeah. We can't ever get 100% unfortunately until we invent time travel, but
although we did have somebody watching a lunch in the delivery room.
That's
so
true. We can go for 100%.
We've already got it. We've already got it.
We can go for a full hundo. We just have to hold on to that traffic. Maybe damn it, we should get back on the Book of Boba and the Mandalorian. We got to capture the kid audience.
There you go.
There's no on ramp for these babies being born into lunches to enjoy our content. All right, we're gonna end things with a toast that Tyson has written to us. A toast to Jim and Aaron. May their steel always be rolled the coldest. May their intellect come from bountiful fields of barley. May they never find themselves in a wide open field with a single stealth walker. Mm-hmm. May they always show competence with a bow. May they never encounter trash people, and may they always take as much time as they like in life and death situations to talk about some unrelated trauma from long, long ago. May they give farming a shot now and then. May their congregation find strength instead of weakness when being locked outside their doors. May they sport a mullet on the reg. May they be allowed to morgulize deep into the night. May they always slide gracefully under dumpsters in times of great trouble. May their tigers always be CGI. May they never be interrupted by speaking with dead loved ones on the phone. May their cans overfloweth with pudding. And finally, may they not meet their demise before receiving extended dialogue and close-ups, providing us with rich new details about themselves, which will soon become irrelevant and forgettable. Thanks to you guys for covering the show. It's been some of the best comedy I've heard, and I will miss it for that reason. Me too, Tyson. I don't know if there'll ever be... as memeable and lulzy a show that we cover for as long a term. I mean, like Black Oil and Beastings, the X-Files stuff was right up there. The Return of 24 and President Grandpa was up, but those were just one and done kind of larks. 11, to be fair, 12 to 13, if we're talking like in regular season years. Yeah, this has been pretty amazing, and it's one of the most consistently fun shows because, man, after like season 6 and 7, it's kind of house money. Like, what the fuck? Like, we've already talked how much we hate the show, and people are still listening. So, yeah, there's no wrong answers here.
Sure.
What a ride. Yeah. Again, I'm not sure if we'll be back to talk about any of the spinoffs. If we do, I imagine they'll be on the OTC or off the clock premium, because I doubt we'll do a full. But who knows? Who knows? I'm never going to say never again after the pandemic happened. But this is where we are leaving things for now. We appreciate everyone who's made it to the end with us. Again, if you want to keep going in January, there's going to be another zombie show. It's a great just to slip right in to The Last of Us. You can subscribe to Bald Move Pulp if you want to follow along with that. Follow us on twitter.com/baldmove for however long that apocalypse lasts. And then, you know, bookmark baldmove.com if you still do things like that. Because we're not going anywhere, and there's lots of great television ahead in 2023. We've talked about a lot of it already on this podcast. Jim, any last thoughts from you?
I mean, I want to thank the people who have stuck with us for this long. I know some of the OGs are still listening. That's not to leave out the people who found us on our final episode either. Like, I'm thankful that everyone has continued to listen to us for these many long and arduous years. And I hope you'll continue to follow us into our other shows, because this, you know what to expect by now. This is the kind of coverage we do. And I'm genuinely excited for some shows, for most shows, and then other shows we're probably gonna have a lot of fun with. So yeah, thanks everybody.
And that's going to be where we put the things to an end. We hope you follow along with some other adventure that we're on here at baldmove.com. But if this is the end, it's been a good one. Until we meet again, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
See ya.